Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality. Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week we are talking about Jack Brooks Monster Slayer from 2008 as picked by Scott. Scott, how about you tell us why you picked Jack Brooks Monster Slayer?
Well, this one's been on my list for a long time, and it probably should have stayed there because it does not hold up.
No!
We can't have winners every single week. I'm not saying this is a loser, but I'm saying that there's stuff that I have slated that I would have been much happier discussing.
How did you first see? Well, first of all, Brian, was this your first watch for this one?
This was my first watch, and the big credit I will give this movie, was it a great movie? No, but same thing as like the girl getting shot in House of the Devil. Like, I at least was held on to the ride enough just from the flashback scene of his parents getting
killed. That's my least favorite part of the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so dark.
Yeah, no wonder I don't like it. Brian's like, I want some realism in a movie called Jack Brooks Monster Slayer.
So I remember this movie, I believe it was either the director of the movie or the star of the movie was on like an early episode of Geekscape to promote it. And I was like, oh, that seems fun. So I went to Best Buy and like grabbed the DVD because it came out right around Halloween. And I was going to have people over at the old apartment that I used to live in with Shrop and Click. Mm-hmm. And we were like having people over for Halloween. I was like, oh, we'll grab this for Halloween. And like we had a good time watching it. But I also remember that it was like a bunch of people hanging out. So we weren't really watching it. You know what I mean? Like we were like talking and going about our lives and then it'd be like, oh, that was a pretty cool thing. And then like we go back to like not looking at the movie. So I haven't thought about this movie since that night. And like when I popped it on, I was like, I remember this was pretty good. Like it's all practical monster effects, which is pretty cool. But like excluding the two or three monsters that pop up in this movie, the comedy is a real stretch at point. Like it's a very try hard comedy is what I'll say.
Yeah. It's like caricatures of people, which is my least favorite.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
the
also
guy who's hitting on his girlfriend.
Yeah, that guy was like the only thing I do like about this movie is the fact that it is a straight nostalgia trip back to the MySpace days with the way that the girls were dressed.
Yep.
I do absolutely love that, and half of my notes are like, man, those were such atrocious fashion choices, but I can't help but feel like happy seeing them because I haven't watched this movie since probably 2010. But to answer your original question, Matt, I bought this on a whim at Best Buy. I knew nothing about it, but it looked dank and had Robert Englund in it, and I was like, you know, what's $20? Because I didn't have like a car payment or a mortgage at the time, so it seemed like a good idea. I think I bought this and this is a really weird and will not be my double feature. High Tension.
Great movie.
I mean, is it? We'll never discuss it on the show.
It's a great one-time watch. I mean,
yeah, it was intense.
Had no idea what I was watching. I put it on and I was like, oh, foreign film, whatever. I just remember being blown away by the twist. Well, maybe I would kill me for it.
which doesn't hold up on second. Like when you rewatch it,
it makes
like,
no sense.
Oh,
it's
this
really...
twist makes zero sense.
Yeah, the twist is not set up in a good way. But the funnier thing about it is that, like, I'm gonna make a blanket statement here, and I think that it's probably true just because this was like the internet was around obviously in 2008 or 2009, because like High Tension would have been 2007, I want to say. I might be wrong with that, but
it's like 2006 2007. Yeah, it's that mid-2000s release.
Yeah So I want to say that was what most of middle America had as their introduction to new French extreme, and that's why it was impressive to us. Maybe people that were more hip had seen Martyrs or, you know, like Inside, mm-hmm. or all that shit, but like I feel like High Tension is kind of the training wheels for new French extreme, and that's why it kind of got so much notoriety when it came out, because it had like a much wider distribution, and I feel like it was just talked about more. It was at Best Buy, you know, like that's Martyrs was there too, but I wasn't gonna, you know, by Martyrs.
I also think that it had a better cover.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
a lady with a fucking circular saw. I mean, fucking great.
Yeah, like this is at a time where a cover can grab someone's attention. You got a cute girl covered in blood holding a circular saw. You're at least going to be like, what the fuck's that about?
Yeah.
Versus like Inside, that's just like a stomach with a pair of scissors next to it. And you're like, oh, I definitely don't want to watch
that.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty glad that wasn't my introduction to New French Extreme. And I'm glad that I still haven't watched Inside, because I don't want to. We're going to get some hate mail for this, I think. I know some people in the group are going to be like, you guys are such wimps. You don't like New French Extreme. Yeah, because we like to sleep at night, you know? Like, we don't want to think about grossness.
Yeah, I just missed the train, man. Like, I never had, like, a gore fetish, but I definitely had a stomach for it more. Like if I would have saw Martyrs and shit when I was like 23, not that I'd be like, this is awesome, but like at 30, I just don't want to, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, I don't want to see it.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Brooks was even grosser than I actually want it to be.
Yeah. I think that Jack Brooks is just like tonally all over the place. And Jack Brooks reminds me of like a lot of those movies that were, it's very much what the direct to DVD releases were every genre. Like this reminds me of a movie that I own that I got from when I worked at the video store. And when I saw it, when I worked at the video store, I was like, man, that's a really funny movie. I can't believe it's direct to video. And then like rewatching it recently, I'm like, oh, like, it was called Bunny Whipped, and it was like a superhero movie about like a guy who becomes a superhero named The Whip, but like it was starring Joey Lauren Adams as she was like just on her downward post, like Chasing Amy and Big Daddy, like descent into just like, you know, $5 bin cinema. And I was like, all right, I'll give this a shot. And it, like at the time, we're like, oh, that was like actually pretty funny. It was a nice like parody of superhero movies. And then I watch it now. I'm like, this is like the lamest. like the sense of humor is just like, well, this is just to make our friends laugh. And like that's as far as it goes. And that's like this, the humor of Jack Brooks, like their idea is like, Jack Brooks is funny because he's got a short temper and he curses a lot.
You know Adam Sandler? It's that.
Yeah, exactly. Take out the actual humor and it's just white male rage the movie, which is, it's very frustrating to watch. Like, but the best part about the first 10 minutes of this movie has to be that one time Regina George punched me in the face, it was awesome. You know, like, I don't know her real name, but I know she was that character in Mean Girls. This movie is all over the place.
But every once in a while, there's a good line. Like the one line that was actually funny enough that I wanted to write it down and talk about is, like, the Harbinger of Doom character that's, like, giving him warning not to work at that house. And he tells him, like, the whole flashback story. And he's like, that thing bit your hand off? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, how'd you dig a hole? It's like a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is it's so, so fucking uneven. But I do think it's really funny that funny, like, Scott, you really made a bad decision with this movie. It's not one, but two dogs get eaten in this movie.
Yeah.
This is the biggest mistake I've made for a horror movie night pick in a long fucking time. And it's not because it's like a horrible offensive movie, but it's just like really not what I remembered it being.
Scott's like, this is the worst horror movie night pick since our last host. Am I right?
So one of the notes that I wrote down is like, Is the song Beyond the Sea just extremely affordable? Because I
it's
feel
everywhere.
Like...
it's everywhere.
It pops up a couple times in this movie, and this movie is cheap.
Yeah.
And I feel like it pops up in a lot of cheap movies.
Yeah, man. It's also, like, really tonally inappropriate for the movie. Not, like, that it's offensive, but it's just, like, dumb. Like, why is that the movie? Why is that the song? It could have been fucking Don't Worry, Be Happy. It would have been a lot funnier, you know? When did Kevin Spacey do Beyond the Sea? Because I wonder if they were like, fuck it, it's culturally relevant. I don't know. Yeah. I think that was probably after Jack Brooks, though.
No, I think it was before. I want to say that that was like 2004, 2005. I'm going to do a quick Google search. But this is another one of those films that reminds us there's not a whole lot of convincing that needs to go into getting Robert Englund to be in your movie.
Yeah, they're like, here's a paycheck. And he's like, fuck, fine.
Yeah, him and Danny Trejo are just like, let's do it.
But the thing about Robert Englund is that he's like such a classical actor, and Danny Trejo is just like rough and tumble, like, fuck yeah, I'll be in your movie, you know?
Well, I love that Danny Trejo has like literally said, like, I've listened to him in interviews and he's like, yeah, I just like doing movies. He's like, I've done so many movies for like a sandwich and $20 because like,
oh
like,
man,
he's like,
I know
someone...
he's gonna be in our next podcast.
Well, cause like his whole thing is he's like, like, he's kind of got that attitude. It's weird to say similar to Lloyd Kaufman, but, like he's just like, look, if there's a bunch of college kids and they're shooting a movie and they want Danny Trejo to be in that movie, who am I to charge him a couple $100 for it? Like,
does he
just
speak
feed
in the third
me.
Person, though? Because that would be a douche move that I would not want Danny Trejo to do.
To be fair, Danny Trejo does own a taco truck in L.A. called Trejo's Tacos. And there's at least a 50-50 chance when you go there that he is on the grill cooking the tacos.
All right, guys.
See, that's just, we're going. That's awesome. And the fact that he's like, I can't charge a college kid a couple $100. It's like, yes, you can. Like, you know what I mean?
Know your worth, Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
So there's the most important part of this movie truly is when Robert Englund becomes the... basically like the Jabba the Hutt demon. I would go a little bit more obscure with my reference and say the Shadow King demon, but I don't think as many people have watched the Legion TV show on FX as have watched Return of the Jedi. So we're just going to go with Jabba the Hutt monster.
I think it's a safe bet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I do love that someone gets... Oh, it's the guy who's like... with the big teeth, who's like, you gotta come and smoke hash. That guy, when he gets his fucking head smashed by Jack Brooks, and then someone else gets their head smashed, and then someone else gets stabbed in the throat, and all I can think about is the Cannibal Corpse song called Stabbed in the Throat. Like, that's what I'm thinking about in this movie, is like, there are so many missed opportunities for just really blunt jokes, you know? Like, yeah. If you're gonna do it, make it fucking stupid. Like, that's what's so good about, you know, Tucker and Dale, is that they're it's a lampooning of a genre, and they really leaned into how stupid the jokes could be. Like, there are dad joke level jokes in that movie.
I just want the listeners to know, if you were confused why we're discussing this movie, you just got your answer right there.
Yeah,
because it's like, they killed two dogs. This is so out of character for Scott. This one guy gets his head smashed in, and then another guy gets his head smashed in, and then that guy got his head smashed in. It's like, there's the Scott Roger.
Yeah. Brian knows me
dude,
too well.
Dude loves that head trauma. So I'm rereading a book that I actually read at the start of the pandemic, but I was like, I've kind of been in like a examining comedy type mood. So I've been rereading the book Wild and Crazy Guys, which is about like the comedy scene of the 70s and 80s. But like, I agree with you with what you're saying, Scott, that like, yes, it needs to be stupid, but like also with using Tucker and Dale as an example, or even using like a movie, like the reference point for this was they were talking about the Three Amigos, and he was saying like, that movie's a lot smarter than you think it is, because it's hard to be that dumb without being very aware of like these deep cut references that the movie is like paying homage to. Tucker and Dale is a very dumb movie that is also an extremely smart movie that like knows all of the tropes,
right,
and plays
yeah.
against every trope, and is like absolutely designed for like, if you're in on, like, it is designed to be, you are in on the joke, you've watched Evil Dead, you've watched like all of these people in the woods horror movies, and like now you're seeing like that completely flipped on its head.
Don't let me confuse anybody that listens to the show. I fucking love Tucker and Dale. I'm not saying that it's anywhere near Jack Brooks. I'm just saying that they lean in better.
But that's what I'm going to say is that Jack Brooks is only kind of stupid and not smart at all. Like yeah. Versus like Tucker and Dale is very stupid and extremely smart.
Yeah, and they tied the movie up at the end. It seems like a dumb enough movie that they knew there wasn't going to be a sequel. So why did it take an hour and 10 minutes to get to like the monsters? You know, this is a movie that like 30 minutes.
It's called Monster Slayer.
Yeah. Like it should just be him killing stupid monsters to get to the big monster for an hour. Yeah. That's what the movie should be.
We didn't need an origin story for Jack Brooks.
Exactly.
Like, or if we did, it could be told in 10 minutes and like just get to like, yeah, no, it's definitely it. And I know that that comes with budget. Like, I think that what they did with the budget that they had for the monsters that they showed is fine. But, like, I agree. Like, it's if you don't have the budget, here's the thing. If you didn't have that budget to be able to make Jack Brooks the Monster Slayer have a shit ton of monsters in it, that's fine. Make a short film, shop it around, and if people are interested, they'll finance you to, like, shoot the rest of it. Like, you could have consolidated this movie into a 25-minute short, got it to play at a place like Fantastic Fest, and I promise you that there would have been at least one investor who would have been like, yeah, I'll double that budget so that you can shoot more scenes with monsters. Like, it happens all the time. That's how you get stuff like Psycho Gore, man.
I don't know, man. What about, it might have been an ego thing. I don't know.
True. I thought for sure, I was shocked. Well, not that shocked. I was a little shocked to find out that the actor who played Jack Brooks didn't also write and direct the movie.
You know, I did too.
He produced it, so yeah, it's still he's still kind of on the hook. Pot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's so funny because, like, I just feel like this movie was the clumsiest movie that we've discussed in a long time, and I mean that as a clumsy fucking person. Like, basically, I break stuff all the time because I'm an idiot. And it's like, it's not that I'm like an actual idiot. It's just that I'm an idiot and clumsy. And it's like the people that made this were semi-competent. I mean, like, I think that when it's good, it's fun. But like, it's just they fucked up so much.
It's also very telling that like a movie like this, you know, you go one of two ways, right? Like, you go the one route where you make this small independent film, but then like 5 or 10 years later, you are making like more notable movies because people saw this little film that you did. And it like is, you know, you could go the James Gunn route. You know what I mean? Like, James Gunn has a bunch of these tiny little films under his belt, but like he said, I think it's in one of the Lloyd Kaufman books. He said like he got Scooby-Doo because on his resume, it said Romeo and Juliet, and one of the producers of Scooby-Doo was a fan of that movie.
Wow.
Like, it's like one of those like crazy situations where like you do these small indie films, but if you allow your skill to shine, something can come of it. But then there's the other route that we also see very equally on the show, where you put all your money into this passion project and your IMDb page is pretty much barren beyond that point because like it made no noise.
But the thing that doesn't make sense why they don't always go that route is it's like a win-win in my opinion. Like, you can do this indie film that people see and love, and like you'll get jobs from it, or you can do this indie film that's horrible and no one holds it against you. Like, nobody holds low budget films against people. Big budget films kill careers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Realistically, you know, like, well, that's the thing, is like Hollywood flop.
A small indie film that no one cares about isn't going to kill your career, but it's not going to bring it to life, I guess. You know,
no, but I mean, I'm just saying, look up Kevin Hart's IMDb, anything before Soul Plane, and he was in some terrible, bad, low-budget movies, and now he's a Hollywood star.
Yeah.
For no reason.
But it's a lot of, like, it's a
for
lot
being
of
friends
just,
with The Rock.
Yeah, yeah, he became friends with, that was pretty much it. But, like, you just take a lot of swings, you take a lot of options, but, yeah, I agree with you, Brian, like, it's kind of that Wayne Gretzky quote. You know, like, you're going to miss all the shots you don't take. So, like, if you're up and coming, like, what do you have to lose?
Yeah.
like you're already not getting paid to make movies. So you might as well, if you made, like, that's kind of the way I felt with, like, doing the We Know podcasting thing was, like, I'm already not getting paid to make podcasts. So like,
why don't I if try I make hard this com- enough?
Yeah, like it's like, so if I make this company and no one pays us for it, I'm at the exact same point I was before I started the company. It doesn't like, there's only up from here. But yeah, all right. So Jack Brooks, we've given you 23 minutes, which is actually shockingly about 20 minutes more than I thought we were going to get into with Jack Brooks. So Scott, what is your double feature with Jack Brooks, Monster Slayer, and please don't take the one that I wrote down?
The Kindred?
Nope. Okay, I'm good.
And that's just because it's got a gooey tentacle monster and it's low budget as fuck. Although I would definitely start with Jack Brooks and end with The Kindred because you always want to end on a high note.
I would start with Jack Brooks and then go, man, what a wasted opportunity for a low budget movie about a monster hunter. And then I'd put on The Headhunter, which is a great usage of doing a Monster Hunter movie with a small budget.
That is a minuscule budget. Like
it's like $4,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's like stupid low.
Yeah, and it is. It was. I mean, I still stand by that being one of the top five best horror movies that I saw in 2019. It might have even been top three.
Blast.
It was so damn good, and I would watch that again in a heartbeat, and it's totally not my style.
But it's also short. Like, he knew what he was doing. He's like, let's keep it 70 minutes. Let's just get in there, show what I can do, and get the fuck out of there. The fact that that's the dude who did Thanksgiving is, like, just, I talk about growth.
It's mind-blowing, yeah. Like, that guy also knew what worked and didn't work, and he took notes. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, if you do a movie, or if you do any sort of creative endeavor, if you do fucking anything, take mental notes, do better the next time if you love it. You know, like I can't tell you how many times I fuck up a recipe or fuck up a song or.
Well, that's the thing. It's failure. If you use failure correctly, it's the most useful tool in your arsenal.
Yeah. And I said I'm clumsy. I'm also a huge failure. So, you know, like if you see anything polished come out of my life, it's because I spent a soul crushing month working on not doing that, you know.
I have three scripts written, fucking two documentaries with barely any footage shot. They just keep fucking going. Keep going. Yeah. Like, whatever. Honestly, I got this from someone else that I was listening to, but I stand by it. It's like,
you shall not be named.
Yeah. No, but seriously, I have so many fucking projects going because what held me back for years is like, I'll start on something and hyper-focus on that with writer's block. And it's just like, dude, fucking go do something else. I don't care that I have like 10 unfinished projects. I have 10 things that I'm working on throughout a year constantly.
So here's the other thing. And maybe I should lend you this book next time I see you, Brian. But like that Wild and Crazy Guys book, they talk about how Ghostbusters, Spies Like Us, and Three Amigos, all three of those movies were scripts that were started and then they decided that they sucked and they put them in a drawer and didn't look at them for over a decade. And then later, like, pulled them out and was like, huh, the script sucks, but the concept, let me just rewrite it. And they would sit down and rewrite it because apparently Dan Aykroyd was writing Ghostbusters for him and John Belushi. Mm-hmm. It was going to be a buddy movie. Mm-hmm. And he got the call that John Belushi had died while he was typing the script. And, like, at that moment was like, well, then I'm never going to make this movie because, like, this was just supposed to be for John and nobody else. And then, like, years later was just like, ooh, I have an idea. Like, I have an idea on how I can take that and do something different with it. And it's like, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not good. It's just not good for right now. All right, so Brian, what's your double feature?
Well, based on the low budget aspect and the fact that you brought up James Gunn, I would double feature this with Terra Firma.
Any excuse,
which
right?
Which is, yeah, man. I mean, I love that movie. I don't know the next time I'm going to watch it. Jay did come downstairs while I was watching it one time, and it was the most judged I've ever felt by my wife since I met her. She was just like, this is, you like this? This is what you like to watch by yourself on a Saturday night? And then I was like, I like this movie.
So, Scott, what is something that you've watched, read, listened to, blogged, recorded, whatever, well, that you want to talk about?
Speaking of creativity, so I want to mention something that I watched after this, but speaking of creativity and like the concept of like hyper-focusing on things, et cetera, that we were kind of going over, I haven't told either of you guys about this, but it's been kind of crystallizing in my brain all of 2021. I want to write just a podcast mini-series, and it's only going to be like 8 episodes, maybe 6 episodes, and I'm saying it on the regular show because I want to put it out in the ether as like, you said it, you need to do something about it kind of thing, you know? But I want to talk about the suspicion and like the archetype of witches and the reality of why those things are tied to the imagery of witches. So like Eye of Newt isn't actually an Eye of Newt. It's like a folk term for an herb. Stuff like that. I just want to do like a cool like deep dive breakdown for a couple episodes. It'd probably be about, you know, like 2 hours. Let's say 2 or 3 hours worth of material total. Just I'd be writing essays and then just, you know, narrating.
That'd be awesome.
It would dovetail into like it's the research that I want to do for the next fake movie that I want to write.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack behind the ambient music and the soundtrack behind the podcast episodes would actually be the fake soundtrack for the fake movie that I have wanted to do since December. So I mean there's
that's fucking awesome.
It's been crystallizing all around this like little sand grain, you know.
Well, we'll be sure to be promoting it very heavily when it's ready to come out. But what movie did you want to talk about as well?
Made You Look. I watched a documentary with Megan. You guys know about this?
No.
It was on Netflix, and it is super, super interesting. It is about...
Is that about the fake art?
Uh-huh. It was so good, guys. You know, it takes a lot for me to get... Well, I mean, it takes like a really well-made documentary for me not to get judgy about it, because like a lot of documentaries feel like they're leading you towards feeling a certain way about the topic, and I hate that. But man... Made You Look was really, really fun, and I highly recommend it. I mean, Megan wanted to watch it because she's an art history major from college, and she loves art and art history and history, and she knew a bit about the whole situation, and it was just a really, really good documentary. And Brian, highly recommend it, because I think that it would be a great way for you to kind of look at a different tone than what I think a lot of what you have reviewed and kind of like internalized documentary wise. It just feels like it's just a really different tone. I love it. It's really good.
Yeah, man. I would I'll definitely check it out. The sad thing is I so badly want to do a different tone documentary than the two I'm working on. It's just that the opportunities that come to my face always include tragedy.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of documentaries and tragedy, the thing that I want to talk about that I watched, and I'll keep it brief because there's not too much to say, is that I did watch the Biggie Smalls documentary that Netflix dropped this week. And if you're even remotely a hip hop head, it's a really, really great documentary. It sucks because it is like a tragic story for both sides, but it also really... I mean, Brian, I'm going to out you a little bit, but you used to have those DVDs called Beef that was just documentaries about rap beefs. But really kind of the last time that like a beef escalated to murder on that level, because I think that people really, that really highlighted what happens when you basically surround yourself with a group of dudes who are filling your head with like, hey, this is what this dude said. This is what this dude said.
I haven't seen the documentary, so I can't say. There may be more details that I don't know. But like the most tragic thing about it was it really wasn't even a beef. It was they were friends. Tupac got shot and was convinced that Biggie planned it. And the whole time Biggie was like, all right, he's just going through something. Like, he's going to come around. Like, it was a lot of Tupac dissing Biggie, but with no response from Biggie. Like, he was just like, all right, listen, we're going to be friends again soon. I just want this to blow over. And then Tupac got killed, and it like really killed him, because he was like, I thought that we were going to be friends again. Like, I thought he was going to get over this, and it was really sad.
Yeah. But it's a well done documentary. Lots of great, like watching some of that footage, like they show a lot of like him performing live, and I've never really seen a lot of Biggie live footage. And like, he's so good. He's so good on stage. It's ridiculous.
Is it Where Brooklyn At, where it's him and Tupac together? I think
they show a ton of it, because like his one buddy like just followed him with a camera everywhere. So it's like all this like backstage footage of him like it's not like from the crowd's view, it's from like the backstage view filming him out on stage.
Yeah.
And you're just like, dude, this guy is going 110% on that stage.
Yeah, man.
Like just throwing $100 bills into the crowd while singing "Give Me the Loot" and stuff. Like, all right, Brian. So, what's your thing you want to talk about?
For once, we're like, I've watched a few things. I don't know what I should talk about. I don't know what I talked about Tuesday. I think I already brought up Judas.
No, we haven't talked about Judas. You just mentioned to me that you would watch Judas.
Yeah.
Oh, I watched Judas and the Black Messiah.
I didn't bring it up until you had brought it up. But man, that is heavy.
It's like I told Matt, I was like, it's heavy, but not heavy like you would think, in the sense of like 12 Years a Slave or Roots, where it's just like, right. you're like, oh my, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't like look in detail at what's done. A lot of it's implied, but it's still just overall very, very fucking heavy, but very well done. Very, very well done. I liked it a lot. And Khalil acknowledged and remembered that my bong when we were 18 was named Frederick Hampton. Yeah, he was like, we became really good friends, but I remember seeing you and you had this really double XL Malcolm X shirt, and I thought, what an idiot.
All right, well, that was Horror Movie Night. That was Jack Brooks, the Monster Slayer from 2008. And we'll be back next week with just another episode. Nothing out of the ordinary for that. So tune in, because it's just going to be a regular, normal episode of Horror Movie Night. And you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/HMN podcast.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.